Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer you ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Well, I'm really happy today, Dan. We have a really great guest, Stuart Venner. He's the founder, CEO of 24/7 Network, which is where many of our listeners hear us and the stations on his network. He's an entrepreneur. He's a radio and television pioneer, and we're really happy to have him on the show today. Stu, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm honored to be on your show. I'll tell you, I listen to your show every time, and I just really like your show a lot.
Well, we like your network. Stu, tell us first, what made you decide to do the network? How did you develop it? And what are some of the things that people should know about it?
Well, we started about 5 years ago. It's something I've always wanted to do, and my mother was in radio, interestingly enough. Back in the 40s, she did a lot of the old-time radio shows that you hear today, that you used to hear from yesteryear. In fact, overnight, we play a lot of old-time radio, and I get to hear her screaming at me in the middle of the night. So I've always had a love for radio, and I really enjoyed it. And we started the station, I say, about 5 years ago, and we went through a lot of changes, and it's not a real easy thing to do. The key to it is you need reliable equipment, reliable servers. And just about every service that we found that was out there was always a problem. And finally, about 3 or 4 years ago, we decided that the only way we're going to do this is if we own our own servers and we do it right. So we did, and we required a good investment, but we have our own servers for running our service, and you know, I say we're up 99% of the time. We're really never down. We have a server in Dallas, Texas, and we have 4 backup systems, and if all else fails, there's 40,000 gallons of gasoline on the premises, enough to run everything for a week. So we have a good, reliable system, so I'm happy about that.
Well, you know, you talk about reliability. We've run into problems ourselves. I have when I had my original program on one of your competitors. But now, you know, we're on twice a week. What type of programming do you have besides our own small business programming? And how can it help a small business knowing about you and using your network?
Well, we have, fortunately, and I feel very lucky about this, but we have 8, I believe, out of the top 25 radio hosts that are rated that are out there on our station. And we've got some wonderful shows, and we have a couple I'm not going to mention that I don't like too much, but they do have some big listening audience. But we have some really good shows out there, and we have a listening audience in all 195 countries. And what we do is something that's a little different than any other internet station is we have transmitters in I think 10 cities. We're just adding Colorado Springs within a week. No one knows about that. You're the first to know this. And we simulcast our stream on those servers, which is a good and efficient way for us to do it, guys. You know, rather than have to have different radio stations, we play the same stream on that, which keeps our costs down, gets the message out there, and doesn't require extra labor, really, not much extra labor to run it. So that's worked out very, very well for us.
Well, I'm going to follow up that I'm a little unclear. When you say you stream it, you can stream it as well. What do you mean by that?
Well, we have our internet stream, and then we simulcast that stream. When I say simulcast, there's about a 5-second delay, but it plays on transmitters that we own in cities around the country. And so what you're hearing on the internet, you can also get, if you're in the area, you can get on your car radio or on a AM, mostly FM transmission. So we're playing the terrestrial as well as the internet stream.
Well, what wave band can our listeners hear this on?
Well, it depends where you are. Where are you located, Don? I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Well, Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you now.
Okay. Well, he's in North Jersey, Stuart.
I don't think we're in North Jersey. We are in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I think.
But you can pick it up. If I'm correct, you correct me if I'm wrong, Stuart. You can pick up your AM/FM 24/7 on the internet anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world, and you can also hear it on the TuneIn, on iTunes, on Streama. We have Android and Apple apps, and we have even a telephone number that you can call in and listen to.
And so our show on your network is AM/FM 24/7. It's also simulcast, and it's available on all of those platforms you just mentioned.
Yes, everything is available on those platforms, plus the FM transmitters in about 10 different cities.
Right, and the you just added, if when you bring in Colorado Springs, that will be your second station, if I'm correct, Stuart.
No, it'll be the same station. It's adding another city. We have like 9 or 10 cities right now.
Okay, I said it the wrong way. When you add another transmitter in another city, you've done two of those. When Colorado Springs is done, you'll have added two so far this year, which would take you to, I think, 11 or 10.
That sounds right. You know, I think that's the correct number, yes.
And where are you headed from here?
Well, we're always looking to add more, but what we've really been getting into a lot, and you do a very good job in this too, I might say, is we've been going into television. And we have our own public Roku channel, which has been a great thing. We have about over 76,000 subscribers. We don't charge for our subscription. But Roku is really taking over television today. I think cable is going to die, if it's not dying already. And Roku was originally, I believe, started by Netflix as a platform to stream their movies. But now there are literally thousands of stations on Roku. But the only time that it really means anything is you have to be a public station. Being a private station doesn't mean much because no one can find you. But we've been a public station for a few years now, which means we're in the main Roku channel directory. And we're getting our audience just keeps growing by leaps and bounds. And your show is on there. We have quite a number of shows. They're really growing. And it's great. It's just really a great platform. Now, there we don't own our own servers. I'll tell you the truth. For podcasting and for video, we needed a reliable source to stream this. And we found there was nothing better for us to use than Amazon. In fact, Amazon not only streams Amazon, they stream Netflix, too. You can't do better than that.
So where do you see, as an entrepreneur in this communication space, where do you see the combination of Roku and iHeartRadio and streaming Where do you see that headed?
Well, that's the future.
Where's it going?
And it's here today. I think you're going to see terrestrial stations just go by the wayside. Cable television, I think, is already going by the wayside because it's so expensive and people just don't need it anymore. I know myself on my own set, I have something called Sling, and there isn't anything I can't get on it through my Roku device. It's the future. It is the future. The cable's going the way of the paid phone.
So, how are you positioning AM/FM 24/7 to take advantage of that opportunity?
Well, we are expanding our television by adding more and more shows, and something that we would like to do down the road. We've started it, but it's still in its infant stage. Is we're trying to get film producers to independently produce their films and show them on our television network, kind of like Hulu and Netflix. Well, I mean, we're not there yet. We're not the Netflix by any means. But we're looking to get independent film producers as well to have their shows on our station.
Right. So you think cable is dying. Roku is the next generation. What about...
It is.
And you think terrestrial stations are going by the way?
I think they're going to go by the wayside. They do. In fact, I think I just read last week in the paper, I believe it was Time Warner, that they're now available on Roku because it's so simple. You don't need these big conversion boxes. All you need is a very inexpensive little Roku box, and you can get everything on it with better reliability than going over cable or over fiber.
What do you think? We've got a couple of minutes before we go to commercial break. What do you think about the stories of the financial trouble that iHeartRadio is in?
Well, they're in trouble. I mean, they're $22 billion in debt. But I believe they have some new management that can probably pull it out. I mean, they're the largest radio network in the world. And they're doing more emphasis on podcasting as well, which your show is podcast on there, and as well as my show and most of our hosts. And it's really the way of the future because everything is on demand, something that we just sent an announcement out today, but this also includes your show. You're also on Mixcloud. They picked up our podcasts. They selected and wanted it on their platform, which is like a Roku. I mean, like iHeart. It's big. It started in England about 10 years ago, and now I think they moved their headquarters to New York. But your show can also be heard on Mixcloud as well.
Do you, Don? You want to jump in before we go to commercial?
Oh, go right ahead. You have a good follow-up question. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm curious about measuring audiences in all these various platforms. You know, when you talk about terrestrial radio, it's really hard to measure how many people are listening. But when you talk about streaming, you get real numbers. You can see when somebody logs on and downloads our show or anything else. But
exactly.
In the other platforms, exactly. All these other platforms that you're talking about with us that I'm not even aware of, do you get streaming numbers on those too?
No, not usually. It's hard to get statistics. We do know the number of listeners in the area and how many are listening, but it's hard to specifically break it down per show. It's a very hard thing. We do this for a lot of people, but it's a huge job. It's very hard to get exact accurate figures. I know that we cover on the terrestrial an area of about 2.5 million listeners, and I think we get a good share of them. And again, it depends on the show. I mean, you happen to have a very good show. There's one show every Saturday at noon. That's the only show I turn my radio off on. But it does have listeners. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit before we go. Do we need a commercial now, Don?
Yeah, I was just about to say, Dan, we have to stop a moment for commercials, then we'll be right back with our guest, Stuart Venner. who's the head of 24/7 Network and a few others, and we're learning an awful lot about our audience. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Life, it's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're back here with Stuart Vedder. He's the head and founder of 24/7 Network and a few other things. Dan, I got a question that just came across the internet for me. But Stuart, in all of these things, what can a small business do to use your network to sell their products or services?
Well, they can, be a sponsor on a show like yours, of course, and we have other shows that are always looking for sponsors. If they have a good message to get out, they can actually get a show themselves. We have a man right now who is very involved in real estate. In fact, he has a show, it's called Flipping America. It's a good show. And I thought I knew a lot about real estate, but he taught me a few things, I have to tell you. And, he's been promoting his show by having a show a couple times a week, and it's a good show, and your show's a good show. People will learn. I learn every time I listen to some of these shows. I learn from your show listening to some of your guests.
Dan and I, from every show, learn something new from each of our guests. Dan, back to you.
Yeah, Stuart, following up on Don's question, you're in 11 markets on terrestrial radio. Could a local merchant, a local businessman, buy time on that singular station, or does he have to buy the whole network?
No, they would have to buy the whole network. That's if we were doing it on a singular basis, we would have to charge a lot more than we do for everything. Then we would have to produce separate shows for everything. And it would get very expensive cost-wise. That's how we can stay low on our prices, by playing the same show everywhere.
Yeah.
But
let me move on to a subject that I think is important, and that is content. How important to you as a owner of AMFM 24/7, how important is content to you as a program producer?
Well, again, we don't have control over that. People buy their time, and they have their scheduled time, and they're responsible for their content. We did actually drop a couple people. The content was just too objectionable. And, we're lucky. We have good shows, I'll tell you the truth. Even the one I don't like to listen to, it's just because it's a music show and it's not what I like to hear. But because I'm old, what can I tell you? I like old music. But content is important. But we've been very lucky in getting good content and getting good hosts and good shows on the station.
Do you think that that content will get even more important as the industry changes?
Well, it's always important because people can always have the choice of changing what they're listening to. So you've got to have a show that is interesting. It's like what interests one person may not interest another. So everybody's not going to like your show, but there's a lot of people that will. And the same with, my own taste. So some people like blondes, some people like redheads. What can I say?
Right.
But you got to have good content that will appeal to people. And that's why I say I like your show a lot, because I learn something every time I listen to your show. I'll tell you the truth.
So the broader the content, the more audience you can attract, which is obviously, it must be good for AMFM 24/7.
Well, of course it is. And then, there are certain shows that appeal to certain people, so we try to put shows around it, either before it and after it, that are of a similar genre, so that you keep your audience. Like, your show is good with other business shows, you know, we try to schedule them that way, and it's worked out pretty well that way.
How much of your broadcast day is filled at the moment?
We're pretty full. In fact, right now, I have 4 prime spots available, 2 half hours and 2 hours. That's all I've got. We are full.
Well, you want to add? Back to you, Don.
Well, I was going to ask, people have said that this younger generation, the newer generation under 25, doesn't listen to things long, and two, has much different taste. Are you seeing generational changes in the radio world?
Well, you always see a lot of that, but we really tend more to be an adult station. We really have a content that's more business-oriented. We have a lot of conservative talk radio shows on. We have very little liberal. It is mostly a conservative station, which I think that's what talk radio really is. You don't find a lot of liberal talk radio.
You know, it's funny you brought that up. Dan is a little bit more conservative than I am, but we met on a conservative program, and we try to keep this program neutral, but we'll find ourselves occasionally going over the end line. But the interesting thing that I thought this week is that the fact that conservative stations seem to outnumber liberal stations 2-1. Do you find that to be the case?
Yes, definitely. Because the liberals have one agenda today. All they want to do is destroy Donald Trump, and they have no other agenda. The conservative stations at least want to discuss the issues.
Dan, it's back to you. I'll be right back.
Okay, so Stuart, if we made a decision, Don and I, we had a talk radio show on another network, and we came to the conclusion that with the election of Donald Trump, there's going to be a lot more interest in making America great again, meaning new business formation, and the bulk of the hiring of all the jobs for America historically has always been through small business, not through large behemoth businesses. And so we've had a lot of guests on the program who talked about how difficult it was for their business under Obama and how dramatically things have changed since Trump became president, despite all of the adverse liberal biased press. But we decided that talk radio in terms of political stories may have pretty much reached the peak, at least until the next presidential campaign, and that there was a greater opportunity trying to help small business people and people interested in small business starting and growing their business. What in your sense, what's been happening to talk radio?
Well, I think you've made a very intelligent decision, because I think that you know, people can only take so much politics, but they want to see results. And fortunately, we're seeing results, and businesses are getting better. And if they can do something about our health insurance and lower taxes, which is supposedly what the Republican agenda was supposed to be, then I think you're going to see even more small businesses. And that is the backbone to this country, in my opinion. And we're getting shows, a lot of that. We have a number of shows like yours that are entrepreneurs shows and that are, you know, appealing to the entrepreneur. And that's what made America great, and we'll keep making it great.
Stu, if people wanted to reach you to do a show like ours, how do they do it?
Well, they can go to our website, amfm247.com. There's contact information. They can always call us at 800-746-8603. I'll be delighted myself to talk to any person. And we are always looking for good shows. Don't have a lot of time, but we'll try to squeeze them in somewhere.
Okay.
Well, another question, Dan, just came across my desk. What are the better hours? We go in the morning and we go in the evening. What are the best hours, and how does one decide when to put on a radio program in what hours?
Well, your hours that you picked that you have are good hours. I like them. I like the morning. I like early afternoon, because we have listeners all over the country. So if it's noon here, it's 9 in the morning on the West Coast, and you know, early evening is very good too, because you're catching drive time in certain areas. We have a lot of listeners on all those times. The real late at night times, the overnight, the graveyard shift, we don't get as many listeners, although we've picked up a lot of listeners with the old-time radio. And we have a lot of people that listen to those old shows, Jack Benny, Gunsmoke, Dragnet, you know, the old shows from the 50s. And
sure.
They kind of hold over to the morning hours. People that are on stay on.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we have time for just one more question, and it's all yours.
Thank you. So if you run out of time to sell, do you start a new channel, Stuart?
We do have a sister channel, and it's 88.3 FM in Newport Richey, Florida, and it's on the Internet at WKLAP.com. And it's a good station, and we do we have a number of shows on there, and that's starting to build. And if we need to, we can start another station as well.
Okay, so you're on your second station, and does that broadcast over the same network or a different network?
It's on our same servers, but it has its own website, its own internet stream, and its own FM stream.
Super. Well, Stuart, it was a pleasure having you. Thank you for educating us and our audience on the opportunities available in on streaming audio. So thanks for joining us, and we'll go ahead.
It was an honor to be on your show. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Now a word from our sponsor.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So, whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Well, Don, we have. Do we have our next guest?
Oh, absolutely, we do. Ruthy Postel Birch is with us. She's written a fascinating book. Written
that
a
book
fascinating
is-
book, and there goes my studio telephone. But let me start all over, because Ruthy Postel Birch has written a fascinating book called How to Build a Piano Bench. I love this. Lessons for Success from a Red Dirt Road in Alabama. Now, having gone to Georgia Tech and not exactly a fan of Alabama, I'm really looking forward to having her on the show. Ruthie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Will you tell us once and again the name of the book, why you wrote it, and its main themes, and then Dan can ask you some questions.
Okay. Well, How to Build a Piano Bench. I searched for a title a long time after writing the book. How to Build a Piano Bench is based on the things that are in the book, and that is the down-home, blue-collar wisdom that I grew up with in South Alabama. My piano bench broke when I was, I don't know, 12. And Daddy said, we couldn't afford to buy one. Daddy said, I'll build you a piano bench. And Mama said, you don't know how to build a piano bench. And Daddy said, oh, you don't need to know how to do something to get it done. You just have to know the next right step. So he went out and got the wood and got the things he needed and built the piano bench. But Daddy didn't just settle for any piano bench. He wanted He said, I want something you'll want to have in your house when you're grown. So he took 3 years. He painstakingly inlaid the entire top of the piano bench with little pieces of wood in a geometric pattern, finished it, by which point I had stopped taking piano lessons, but I do still have Daddy's piano bench sitting in my music room.
Hi, this is Dan Perkins, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan.
I love the subtitle, Lessons for Success from a Red Dirt Road in Alabama. I mean, I'm an author, as is Don, and I write mysteries and thrillers. And I think that as authors, we are really artists that paint with words. And Lessons from a Red Dirt Road in Alabama is a beautiful, wonderful picture. How did you come up with the second piece?
Well, I grew up on a red dirt road in Alabama. Patane Street in Pritchard, Alabama, which is in Mobile County, was smack between two paper mills, and you can imagine. All the other streets were paved with paving or cement, but our street was still Alabama red clay, which when the wind blew up, it got into our houses and the curtains and our clothes, and Mama could never wash it out. And then they sent the truck out from the city every once in a while to oil it down, but that didn't last. And then the rains would come, and it would turn into rut, and then it would dry, and it was absolutely wonderful place for a child to grow up because everything was color.
So tell us about the story. Tell us about the story.
Well, the story. There are a million stories. I grew up with storytellers. Dad was a storyteller, Mama was, and the people on Patane Street. And I was one of the only two or three children on the entire street. And nothing to do, I would go, we didn't have ballet and all the activities kids today, so I had plenty of time to get bored and learn how to be creative and getting unbored. So I would go and sit on the front porches, and these old people would tell me stories, or they would tell me how they did their lives. They all came out with, how should you live your life? And I found people complicate things so much. They borrow problems from tomorrow. It's so complex. These people simplified. They were living the lesson of simplify because they couldn't afford to complicate things. They had to deal with their problems or mourn them and go to bed and get up the next morning because they had to go to work. And they had to buy school shoes for Gloria. They couldn't just stay there and wallow around in problems. So it's like take one thing at a time and knock it down, simplify, and live in the moment. Those were some of the really important living lessons I brought from down there that I thought were important to put in this book. I thought it was important for people to read. The other is that's important for people to read and also funny. These people, the humor and the way people reacted to life was just funny, and I like to laugh.
You know, there's some people that say that the problem with the Democratic Party in this country today is they don't know how to laugh. They don't know how to laugh at themselves. They take everything way too serious, where Republicans do have the ability to laugh at themselves and make fun of themselves. Is the book appealing to millennials, or is it mostly an older crowd?
It's aimed a lot, and a lot of people I talk to are the millennials trying to find a way because, again, they haven't gotten a lot of lessons. They got they haven't gotten a lot of lessons about how to get where they want to go. They know they want to go somewhere, and they think that they need somebody to hold their hands and you know. So I think the one audience is made up of the young people who are looking for answers on life. So no, it's aimed at I always thought it was aimed pretty much at everybody. When the publisher and the people were talking to me about it, they said, you know, the millennials can change careers, start careers.
So the story here is life lessons learned.
Life lessons learned and funny stories along the way. One of the things is that one of the big the messages that I care a lot about is to lighten up and laugh. People are, and I don't know if it's just, it's not just millennials, it's everybody. People are afraid to make mistakes. They're afraid to not know. They're afraid to be dumb. Well, I made mistakes and I didn't know and I was dumb and it really made me successful. I think it made me accessible. I made people feel better about themselves. I had an employee who was really bright, really, really bright. But I'd been in this business forever, and he'd been in it for under a year, and he wanted to do everything as well as I did it. And he was really hurting himself. So I sat down and made him a journal of every mistake I could think of that I made early in my career and gave it to him. And I said, now, read this. Stop trying to be me. Go be you. Make your own mistakes. Put them together with my mistakes, and you'll be greater than I ever was. And I think it lightened him up. It made it easier for him.
I think that you're – go ahead, Don.
No, to you first, Dan. You're the...
I think that one of the things that is important to me as a writer, and it sounds like it would be also important to you, and I think it's important to Don, too, when he writes books, is that I consider myself an artist who paints pictures with words and to be a storyteller. I want people to be afraid. I want people to be scared. I want people to be afraid to turn the page because they have no idea what's happening next. I think a lot of people want that. What do you think?
I know I want it. I want people to not be able to wait to get to the next story or find out about something else that Daddy said or Mama said or somebody, you know, Aunt Pauline said or just hearing the stories of the people that I've worked with in my career. I want people to laugh. I keep harping on that because I think it's so important. You're right. Maybe a lot of people have gotten too uptight about their missions. You hear mission and purpose all the time, and I want to say, make me laugh. One of my first people, and I've had these really gratifying people that I've worked with in my career. One of the first ones was this young girl. And I had a job as a clerk at a bank. And I sent her for the interview, and the office manager there was just stiff. He was a retired Army colonel, but very stiff and very serious. And she went back for a second interview, and he called me afterwards, and he sounded shaken. I said, what happened? He said, well, she walked into my office, sat down at my desk, slammed her hand down, and said, I claim this job in the name of Jesus. And I said, well, what'd you do? And he said, well, I hired her. I said, great. I asked her about it. She said, well, her grandmama told her that if she wanted something and it was good and right, that she should claim it in the name of Jesus and he'd give it to her. And he did.
Don, you want
to... Yes, Dan. My question to you is, in the way you answered already, I wanted an example from your own life where you saw all these principles come together.
Well, I guess a lot of different places. You know, I have a lot of, let me think, probably one case is after I've been in this, I've been in the staffing business, personnel agency, doing placements for my career and now my business. And when I was fairly new in the business, I reached this point where I just had a horrible couple months. and had the worst day. And that day my daddy called, and I was going on and on saying it was horrible. I didn't know if I could do this job. I was failure. Daddy stopped. He said, "You didn't let those people at your work hear you talking like this, did you?" And I said, "I kind of know because I had." And he said, "You get yourself back up there. You wipe put a smile on that face and get in there and get into that office, because if you'll get over this, you'll get better. But these people will still remember how bad you were right now." So I think a lot of the things that I learned and the things he gave me right then came together. It's go in there and do your job. Quit acting up. I'm not sure that answered your question exactly.
The nice thing about this program is there's no right or wrong answers, just informative ones.
That's a lot of what life is about.
Well, we try. But as an author and as someone, what would you say to people who want to start out and write a book like yours, or in fact any book? What have you learned so far from it?
Well, it's writing. I learned to write, but I think I learned to write by reading. But I think you just have to do it. I didn't think I could write a book way back when. I thought I didn't have any ambition that was that lofty. So I started going to the Bethesda Writers Center and taking poetry writing. And then, of course, all the poems were stories. And I thought, well, I don't know why I can't do this. And then incredible character, extraordinary character I've ever known was my mother, and she died way too young. And I set about starting to write about her, only it was a novel based on her character and based on her childhood. And I got all the way through that, and I didn't know quite where to go with it. So I had to start this business, which took all my time. So then I started writing this book. I think you learn as you're writing about you. I mean, you learn about you and who you are and what your values are more than any other way, I think.
Dan, back to
there
you.
There are people who say that the most successful writers are writers who write about what they know or have lived. And maybe that's what this book is a reflection of you as a person and your life growing up on the red clay road. We just have a minute or two before we go to commercial break, so let me ask you a quick question. And I'll have more after the break. How has writing both, and I don't know whether you've written more than the book on your mother and this one, how has writing changed you?
I don't know that it has. And the reason I don't know that it has is that I've lived these things for so long. I've been in a people business, so all the things I say in the book, I've said to people. I mean, I would interview a candidate who wants a job, and I'm trying to get that candidate ready to go out and get a job, and I would tell them things that in the interview that Daddy had said to me, like, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't mind if somebody thinks you're stupid. That's the only way you get smarter. Or I would tell them about mistakes. I said, if a mistake's somebody else's fault, you can't fix it. So figure out where – that's what I tell my employees. Figure out where it's your fault. Then you can fix it. Figure out where you could have stopped it. So if the other guy's fault, you can't do a thing about it. So I think in answer to your question, I think I just lived the things in this book for so many years on a day-by-day basis, telling them to people, that it was just part of me. And one of the reasons to write the book is I just didn't want all these people to die. They needed to live.
Dan, we have to take a break.
Sure.
We're talking with Ruthie Postow-Birch, who's got one heck of a book and one heck of a career. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
So we're talking. We're
Go ahead. Hi.
You first, Dan.
Ruthie, I have a question. I have a couple of questions, but let me start off with. Besides your mother's autobiography, and this book, have you written anything else?
Well, I have two blogs, and I'm writing another book right now. I have a blog for on my company website, which, again, has a lot of humor about the process of interviewing and getting jobs, and also advice, but humor's better. And then I have a blog on my personal website, the book's website, with articles, with things about the book. And now I'm writing a book. I'm writing my husband's biography. But he was really interesting. A guy who grew up on Long Island, New York, went to Columbia Law School, and then went to Alaska. And he got to Alaska when the state was 7 years old and was involved in with these people who were part with Wally Hickle, who said, "I'm building a state here. I need bright young people in here." And he was Senator Stevens' first chief of staff and has been involved in with these people his whole career. And it's I think it's going to be a great book because he's interesting. His four stories, maybe that's why I married him. His stories are funnier than mine.
So what's the website for your books and you?
The website for my book is just RuthiePascalBirch.com.
Spell it out.
It's Ruthie with an I, R-U-T-H-I. Postow, P-O-S-T-O-W, Birch, BIRCH.com.
Thank you. One more question, then I'll turn it back to Don. What is your favorite all-time story?
I had a client who was a stockbroker, and he was also one of my big mistakes. He had a position open working in the cashier cage. That's where they kept the bearer bonds and everything negotiable. And he wanted a person with an accounting degree. And my mistake was I should not have accepted the assignment. I didn't place accountants and didn't really know how to go about recruiting them. But I took it because I didn't want to lose the client, any piece of business, which was stupid. So I worked and worked and worked, and he was getting tired of waiting, and I said, just give me more time. Then one day this woman walked into my office, and she was perfect. She looked stock brokerage professional. She had on this blue tweed suit, and her hair was for everything. And she sat down at my desk, and she had a degree in accounting. And I didn't interview her for 10 minutes before I grabbed the phone and called him and said, she's perfect. I'm sending her right over. Well, I got a call back from him 15 minutes after she left my office, so they must have talked for more than 2 minutes. And he said, Ruthie, she's sitting here with me. You're right. She is a lovely person. But we think that this isn't going to be the right position for her because she's going to have a problem with getting bonded. And I said, oh? And he said, did you happen to notice the 3-year gap on her resume? I went, no. He said, you know why there was a gap? And I went, no. He said, does the word incarcerated mean anything to you? I said, I think I have to go now. He said, no. Would you like to know why she was incarcerated? I went, no. He said, embezzling. And I said, my mother's calling. I have to go now, and hung up. I did not lose the client, which goes to prove if you're going to make a mistake, make one so monumental and so stupid that the other person will have a story to tell forever.
So did you find him an accountant?
I told him to go find one through another source that I really shouldn't have gotten into it to start with. But he kept giving me his other business.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Ruthie. Should people take on assignments where they're really not qualified? We do it all the time. But what's your take on it now that you've had such an experience?
Well, I've had another experience in my own company. We place administrative people. Most of our people that we place are college graduates with 6 months to 2 or 3 years of background. The true executive assistant. But one of my clients, and I blinked. I wasn't involved. But one of the people who works for me, they gave him an opening for a bookkeeper. And I didn't stop them from working on it. Well, they filled it. The person got in there and worked there for 2 weeks and was fired. We have a guarantee. So the next person, they placed somebody else who didn't show for work and didn't go. They placed somebody else in that person. I don't remember what happened. That person got fired, too. So I stopped them. And I called the client, and I need to tell you something. I am really sorry. I blinked. I should give your money back. Ask them, please give us, we will give us another bookkeeper with you. But people get greedy, or I don't know what, they want it all. I guess I got greedy. And instead of going out and spending that time getting their business, they put themselves out there as doing something that they're not going to do. They're judged on that. And it's one thing to go about learning a new skill and admit I'm learning a new skill, but it's another thing to jump, which is what I did.
So let me ask you another question. Yeah, we've just got a few minutes. So how much of your time now is spent in writing, in promoting the book, and how has it impacted your business?
Well, I have a lot of people and other people doing a lot of the on-the-ground work in the business now. Most of what I do for the business is training and classroom-type training. And I do recruiting. I do a lot of recruiting for our business because you can never stop hiring and recruiting for your people. So I do that, and then the next portion of time is I'm writing 2 blogs every other week, or 1 every week. And I manage to spend probably 3 hours. Some days I don't write at all. Other days I'll spend.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I'm what they call a street writer.
We lost her, Dan. I'm going to try to get her back.
Okay.
To the phone right now. Please leave a message. Thank you.
Sorry about that. We've lost her. David, we're going to have to fill in 5 minutes from that, and you're going to have to fix. Okay? David?
Can do.
David,
yes.
We'll take 5 seconds of silence, and then we'll go to Dan. I'll say now it's time for Dan's tip of the day. We'll do that. Then we'll do 5 minutes of Dan and I, and that should bring us an hour. Okay?
Cool. Okie dokie.
Okay. Now it's time for Dan's tip of the day.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Should I grow my business or stay the size that I am? One of the most difficult decisions about a small business is, should I try to grow it? And if I want to grow, what is the best way to do it? If you look at the internet, you can find lots of advice on how to expand your business. So here's your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Go to the SBA.gov website and you'll find 10 ideas of how to grow your business. They're not in order of importance, they're just 10 ideas. Some may be more suitable, others may not, for you and your business. The one that struck me was, add another store. My brother-in-law started with one pizza shop, and over the last 15 years, he's grown to five. You may not have a storefront, but a service business. So look at your competitors and see if they might be willing to sell or merge with you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full. Full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit costs. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan, we have time for just one more question for Ruthie, and why don't you take it?
Well, thank you for coming back, calling back in, and helping us over that little technical difficulty. Modern technology. I had another happen this morning. So in looking at your writing, have you thought about, do you want to branch out and try something, a different genre?
Yes. I do. I have a novel that's written. I want to get back to that. Taking it one step at a time. I would love to. I don't know how to do it, but then you only have to know the right next step, right? I would like to do other kinds of writing.
Well, good luck to you. And
Thank you.
Don, back to you. Back to you, Don.
Ruthie, tell us once again your website.
It's RuthiePostalBirch.com, and my book, How to Build a Piano Bench, is on it's on Amazon, it's on Barnes & Noble, it's on just about every bookstore's website. And I would love to have people read it and then go to the website and tell me what you think about it. Or give me your stories. I love to hear other people's stories, obviously.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Ruthie, and good
luck
to you.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guests?
Well, Stuart is obviously a visionary who built AMFM 24/7 into a juggernaut, and we're glad to be with him. I thought Ruthie was just absolutely charming, and her stories about the red road and the people on the road, people that came across her life and are great storytellers. I really believe one of the things that we're missing in America is we're missing good storytellers, and I think that you and I are trying to do that with our books.
Well, we're trying that. It's interesting, you know. Growing up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Southern literature was where people really looked for the new American coming. But here in the 21st century, Southern literature, as exemplified by Ruthie, is really not mainstream anymore. And that's a sad part, because it personified the Horatio Alger type of bootstrap stories that made America great. But can I go off on a tangent for a minute, Dan, and talk about it seems to me that the numbers indicate that the economy is picking up steam, and certainly in the small business sector. But the headline in today's USA Today is the fact that the Trump economic bump is an illusion. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the objectivity of the mainstream media is an illusion, and I just think that they basically don't understand that. I did a presentation on. I was on China Global Television on Friday night, and I took a chart with me. I stole from Karl Rove and took a whiteboard, and I gave them the results of polls that were reported on Thursday, the day before. 57% of the American people, according to a Zogsby poll, are tired of what the mainstream media constantly harping on Russia. The Marist PBS poll showed that the vast majority of Americans were looking to have more input and more stories about a lot more things than just focusing on Russia. And I think that, and the third one, can't remember it off the top of my head, but clearly America is fed up, tired, and doesn't want to hear any more about Russia, because the Democrats have yet to produce anything, and it's time for the country to move on.
Well, unfortunately, that has to be the last word, Dan, because we're coming up to the end of the hour.
Well, thank
you for
joining
us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.
Let's try that ending one more time.
Try what ending?
Okay. Well, Dan, I guess that that's going to be the last word. So I'm going to say goodbye.
And for Dan, this is Dan Perkins saying goodbye, and looking forward to talking to you again next week on Recalculating.biz.
David, that should give you enough to put everything together. Sorry, it's a little bit ragged, but I think there's enough there, correct? David?
Yes, understood. I'll have no trouble cleaning this up. I should have waited for your last goodbyes, but lesson learned, and we'll do that next time. I'll piece this together. We'll have an even hour.
I'm going to send you, I was listening to it and watching it, and I think we could cut down both of the band right from the tape, and we'll try it. And I'll send it to both of you and see what you think by Wednesday, okay?
What are you saying by Wednesday?
I will cut down, what's your name? This woman is the most persistent woman.
Why don't you put your phone on mute?
Hello? Yeah, hold on, please. I did. But anyway, I will just cut the script down by Wednesday and send it to you both for approval.
Okay.
So you're gonna take the paper words and cut it down, and then you want us to re-record to a new script?
I don't think we'll have to re-record, Dan. Take a look at what I'm doing, and then see what you think. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
But
it was
a good show despite all the problems.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
It'll edit up nice. And maybe I can edit down the intro based on what you send me and just cut pieces out, whatever you want to do.
You may not get that before Wednesday, though, David. You have to have the show there tomorrow, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you're probably not going to. He's still not back in New Jersey.
Yeah, this is a long intro. Yeah, right. We'll have this intro will be the same as all others. So what we're talking about is for future beyond today, yes.
Yes. Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. We don't have Dan.
Huh? No. Do we need him for anything?
Are we not doing anybody else?
No.
You have another
guest? We're finished.
Cool. Oh, okay. Blessings to you. When do you come back to New Jersey?
Tomorrow morning. I'll be in the office tomorrow afternoon.
Yes. Oh. Yes. Okay. Very good, sir. May you journey well.
I think you have enough there, but I think you could take out the part where Dan says about the glitch. You don't need it because I think we can smooth it over so that no one will ever know we had a glitch.
Agreed. Will do. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Just a question, answer, and go from there. I think you have enough to stretch it into an hour.
I sure do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
No problem, though.
By the way, Dave, if I don't say it, I listen to the programs afterwards, and you do a damn good job of making us look good. And you heard Stewart say it, that the show sound good.
Well, when you got something good to work with, it's easy to do. All I do is tidy up the time here and there and tighten the format and everything like that. But, you know, I agree with Stewart. It's a good show. Thank you for the compliment. I do try to do everything right to help make the show be supported with the nuts and bolts, and it's a great show.
But make no mistake, when you do the edits, you make us look better. Thank you.
I think thank you. I try to. Okay. have a good night.
You too. Yes. Bye-bye.